As we start National Marriage Week, we're going to be talking and thinking about physical intimacy and the role that plays, particularly within a marriage relationship. So obviously this topic is going to be of an adult nature, so a little warning if you've got young children in the room. Now, as part of this National Marriage Week, the Marriage Foundation are challenging couples to pursue what they call a naked marriage. No, that doesn't mean you have to become a naturist. It means tackling uncomfortable topics in order to have a more fulfilling marriage. Well, Andy and Fiona Baines are leaders of a ministry called Time for Marriage, a network supporting Christian couples. And they spoke to Premier's Chick Yule about the God-given gift of sexual intimacy.
I reckon it's all about, I mean, that's like almost the first sort of marriage ceremony when Adam and Eve sort of came together. That's quite a nice way to look at it, I suppose. And I think it's all about, it's creating something new. It's the fact that they, you know, you're sort of called to leave and cleave anything that was there before and sort of form this brand new sort of unit. I like to think there's something quite magical. When a couple get married, it sort of isn't just 1 + 1 = 2. It's 1 + 1 somehow equals more than two. There's something magical and deeply spiritual that happens, I think, when a couple come together. And obviously Adam and Eve were the first couple to do that. So I think there's something about that that sort of becoming one that it talks about an exclusivity, I think, and a real intimacy. So I think obviously, you know, God was referring to that physical union as part of that. And I think, first of all, I think it's just really important, we think, that marriage is a real gift from God. And that was like his, like a wedding gift, in a sense, to Adam and Eve. And it's that wonderful sort of intimate physicality that you can have together exclusively, hopefully, as a husband and wife together, that just brings us such a closeness and such a sort of richness to two people. So I think, yeah, something about leaving, forming something new, something about exclusivity, and something about, yeah, sex being a gift from God, I suppose.
I sometimes have said to youngsters when I've been doing sessions on sexuality with them, you know, that command from God, be fruitful and multiply, is, as far as I can see, the only command that you never had to repeat and tell people five times to get them to obey. And obviously, part of that deep intimacy is the sexual relationship in marriage. I want to hear you talk a bit about that, because it's often a subject that, I don't know, in Christian circles, we tiptoe around rather than bold address.
Yeah. How often do we hear a sermon on, you know, our sex lives? Never. So yeah, it's really important. We're really happy to talk about it with you.
Well, in fact, I think the only sermon I've ever heard on sexual relationships was from a guy who said, I want to tell you men that the difference between natural attraction and lust is natural attraction is the first look, lust is the second look. And then he paused and said, so listen, guys, take a long first look.
Very good.
But I, you know, I'm wondering, just how important is that sexual relationship? Well, I'm not wondering, I know. But I'd like to hear you talk about how important it is in a marriage and what is its place in a healthy lifelong marriage?
Well, it's the way we connect. You know, as Andy said, we connect so deeply when we make love. It's a different way of communicating and connecting together. So we feel it's core. It's not just icing on the cake. It's not just an optional extra. We feel it's core. And often if things are tricky in a couple's relationship, you know, it's the thing that will get neglected, because it's a tricky area. You know, it's complex, but in the working out the complexities, that actually gives our relationship more depth, actually. So
I know that you guys do marriage enrichment sessions and all that kind of thing. How do you tackle this kind of thing when you sit down with, I don't know, 5, 6, a dozen Christian couples? How do you help them to understand its place? How do you help them to leave the weekend they have with you better prepared for a full and rich marriage?
Well, I think, first of all, it's not the first thing we talk about. I mean, that's quite important. So it comes sort of, yeah, sort of towards the middle end of one of our weekends. And so we've sort of, yeah, built up a bit of trust by that time and all got to know each other a bit better, I suppose. So, yeah, the timing is quite important. But it's just that acknowledgement that we don't speak about it, because we generally don't. And it's one of the hardest things to talk about to anybody really, but even to each other, that there's something very strange about our sort of, whether it's the sort of British stiff upper lip, or we just don't talk about these things. But, and that's so often part of the problem, is that just couples, usually it's sex and money are the two things that couples really don't want to talk about, because it usually ends up in some sort of heated sort of debate, or it can do. And so the fact
that they're difficult things to talk about.
They are difficult things to talk about. So it's almost trying to give couples that permission to actually talk about it. And the nature of physical intimacy, you do have to be explicit sometimes, and just saying some of the words, which we won't say now, but we all know that some of the words you might have to say. And it just, even with somebody who you're the closest person to on this earth, it can be really embarrassing. So we try to sort of, I think, normalise a conversation about sex with couples on our weekends, and also, you know, explain that it's often about seasons. So we don't know where the couples are at when they come on a weekend. It may be they've always had an amazing sex life. It may be it's always been a real challenge for them. It may be they've given up altogether. But very often it's all about seasons. We know that when you've got tiny kids, if you've been blessed to have children, then bed is for sleeping. It's not really for anything else, because you are exhausted mentally and physically and spiritually if you've been looking after young children. So, but then it's acknowledging that there are other times, and it often depends on, you know, your emotions, how well, you know, life's going. It may be that, you know, work can affect it, or finance can affect it, or health can affect it. So it's just trying to make couples realise that they're, what they might be experiencing if they are having some issues at a particular time is perfectly normal.
I'm wondering, Fiona and Andy, you know, we live in a culture that's become so sex-obsessed as a thing in itself. And I'm wondering if the fact that it's kind of got divorced from wooing and romance. You know, I look back on our courtship, which was a very long time ago, but we knew each other 6 years before we got married. And there was a long time of wooing, and we've learned to kind of plan for spontaneity in our relationship. And I wonder if that's one of the problems today, that kind of healthy romance, not the kind of unrealistic happily ever after stuff, but that kind of healthy romance has got lost from relationships.
I think what we've learned in our work with couples is also that couples don't always realise some of the basic things they need to do in order to have a great sex life, which is romancing each other. You know, I think we don't get educated. All we see is what we see in the media or on TV or in the films, where people just jump into bed, they've got amazing bodies, it all happens spontaneously, and it's all great. You know, everything works like clockwork. You know, and so that's what we see. We don't actually. We're not actually told about the nitty gritty of things that might be needed or might happen or might go wrong, that, you know, it can be quite messy, you know, that kind of thing. And so I think we think it's really important to let couples know about these sides of it. And the fact is that we can't just jump into bed and hope that everything will go well. We need to have put in the legwork. We need to have, been kind to each other in the day. We need to communicate well. We need to be investing in our relationship, making sure that each other feels loved, in order to then have a great sex life. We can't just switch it on and off again. And it's interesting that you talked about spontaneous, the spontaneous times, because those are lovely, but also sometimes we need to actually diary it in, because actually sometimes it doesn't happen spontaneously when we're busy or life is demanding. So sometimes we do need to just say, right, let's book a date night in, let's do something special that will invest in our relationship, increase that feeling of being loved and romance and desire, that will then help us to want to make love, really.
I remember shocking a young couple that we were doing marriage preparation with when I said to them, Margaret and I actually make love from morning till night. And there was one of those silences, you know, and I tried to explain to them, what I mean is that, you know, it doesn't magically work when you close the bedroom door. It's all the little kindnesses during the day. It's helping in the kitchen. It's a kind encouraging word. It's saying, you know, you look really nice today. That there is a sense in which, you know, make love has got kind of reduced to just purely the sexual act when it is part of what we do in a marriage, isn't it? We make love with each other. We create a love that was never there before.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, it's that word wooing, I mean, it sounds old-fashioned, it sort of is, but it shouldn't be really, because it should be, I mean, so often when we see couples who are drifting apart, or even they've, the marriage has come to an end, sometimes, yes, it might be the classic affair or something like that, but usually it's just because a couple have drifted apart and they've stopped investing, and one of those things would be, you know, wooing. They think that they get married and you have to stop wooing each other and romancing each other, and that's usually with couples. You say, well, what do you do to hang out together? What do you do to have fun together? And they look at you like you're mad, because there isn't anything. They haven't got a common...
They've forgotten why they fell in love, and that's what we've got to recreate. We have to recreate that feeling of falling in love each time, haven't we? And that's so important to invest in that. You know, think to ourselves, what is that thing that connects us? For Andy and I, it's a spontaneous G&T on the sofa on a Wednesday night. You know, it's a school night, we shouldn't be doing it, but you know, it's lovely, and we enjoy that, and that makes us much more inclined to feel loving towards each other, you know.
Well, Premier's Chick Yule has been chatting with Andy and Fiona Baines from a ministry called Time for Marriage, and they say as part of good physical intimacy, communication is really important.
You've got to put in the practice on the easy conversations in order to be able to get down to the difficult ones, you know. So we need to be practicing with those, you know, those trivial things, you know, making sure that we're connecting in with each other, so that then when we have to do the difficult conversations, we can do that.
And also, so often it's what was modelled by them growing up, by their parents or whoever their sort of primary carers were. You know, if they never saw their mum and dad even arguing, then the first time they might have an argument with their spouse, they think, well, it's all over. Whereas if they'd seen their parents communicating, and sometimes that does end up in an argument, but they then see that that didn't mean that they didn't love each other, that didn't mean the marriage was over. It just meant they'd had an argument, it was dealt with, and the next day things were fine again. So very often couples that didn't see their parents being, you know, talking about feelings words, talking about emotions, then I wonder why they then can't do that. So if it hasn't been modelled or taught, then couples need to sort of almost learn it again somehow.
On the subject of difficult conversations that you hinted at there, I'm going to raise a little tricky one in this conversation. Now, I had a sneak little look at your Time for Marriage website, and I noticed there you have some questions that you've dealt with from couples. And I noticed that one of them referred to, it was a question of, Is it ever right to use sex toys in a marriage? Now, that seemed to me a pretty brave question to allow to be asked. So I'm kind of looking at you, wondering how you answer that. You know, what are the things that are permissible? Are there sort of definite lines where in a couple's sex life they can do that, but they can't do that? You must have a lot of wisdom on that, said he, throwing the ball carefully into your court.
That would be good. So quick prayer.
We're used to being asked that question. And the thing is, what I would say is that our opinion is our opinion, and it doesn't mean that actually it's the you know, the global Christian opinion, but in our experience, actually, you've got to discuss as a couple what you feel comfortable with, and actually anything that enhances your sex life as a couple is actually great. You know, we God's given us creative minds. He's given us the ability to be creative, and actually being creative often helps us to flourish. So, you know, if we can be creative in our sex life, then actually that will help our sex life to, you know, keep growing and flourishing. So, you know, what works for you as a couple, if that involves getting in a sex toy that will actually, you know, you will both get pleasure from, then why not, you know? Yeah. And our friend, we've got a really good friend who is a psychosexual therapist, and she's in Christian as well, she would definitely endorse that. So, we're quite comfortable about
I mean, saying that. Often you look to the Bible, don't you, to get instructions for all sorts of things in life, and it isn't, you know, that explicit. There's not a list in there. It'd be quite helpful if there was. But I think it is about that communication thing. What are you comfortable with? What do you like and don't like? And I think ultimately, we know, I think God's given us a conscience. We, generally speaking, we know if something's not right, don't we, sort of thing? I think in life in generally, and I think that would also be the case for, in terms of sex toys and things. I mean, ultimately, your hands are a sex toy, aren't they? I mean, your mouth's a sex toy. It's just an extension of that somehow. So there's probably no right or wrong answer. It's just getting couples to talk about it and deciding whether that's something that's helpful and they feel... enhances, but it certainly shouldn't be anything that's forced on the other one or makes somebody feel uncomfortable.
Well, there may not be definite right and wrong answers, but I must say I think that's a very thoughtful and wise answer. And seeing just how thoughtful and wise you are, well, what about the couple who would say to you, we want to use, I don't know, I'm using the word mild, it's not very explicit, but we want to use mild pornography together. Would you draw a line there? Would you see dangers in that?
I think the danger of pornography is it distracts us away from our actual relationship. So the thing about pornography is that you're looking at generally, I mean, my observation of pornography is it's generally couples with beautiful bodies, again, always getting it right. And actually, that's not the reality of a sex life. So it's kind of giving you an unreal expectation on how your own sex life is going to be. So I would never say... never, but I can't see that it's a good idea, really, for I don't think we would look to use that, because just think it we need to enjoy each other, warts and all, you know, really, and learn to love that if we don't. So
I think it's also, I mean, with intimacy, it's basically about focusing on each other, isn't it? And I think you know, things with sex toys, and even if you're sort of living out some sort of fantasy, again, as long as it's nothing too out there, but I mean that's focusing on each other, whereas generally speaking with pornography it's taking that focus away from each other and onto other people. And really, as I said at the beginning, you know, God designed sex as a wonderful intimate thing that a husband and wife could enjoy exclusively together with each other. And so I think anybody else being involved is probably not helpful, but again, you know, it's just what it's hard to make hard and fast rules, really, but probably a cautionary note is what we would say.
What we've observed about pornography as well is that the you start mild and then it's very easily to get, you know, into other areas. And so, you know, that's a danger, really.
I'm just remembering a thing I read in C.S. Lewis' Donkeys years ago, where he said the problem with lust and pornography, it seeks an impossible maleness with an impossible femaleness. And it is that sense of something that is ultimately leads you to a place that is unreal. Thank you for answering that so well. Here's a question for you. What would you say to a couple listening to this who are really struggling with intimacy at this time? Maybe it's a physical illness. Maybe it's just a marriage has gone dull and dry and lifeless. What kind of counsel would you give?
The first thing I think I'd say is to seek help. I mean, so often, because it's embarrassing or people think it's embarrassing, they just hide it away. And again, they think they're the only people who've got issues. I'm not a person who's anti-social media at all, but so often it presents everybody else's best, doesn't it? It's their best that they present on social media. We know our worst. So we think everybody else is having great marriages, great family time, amazing time during lockdown, having great sex all the time. And so I think the first thing I'd say to a couple who are struggling in this particular area of intimacy would be to get help. Now, depending on what that problem is, it may be go and see a GP, because if you go and see a GP, they won't be embarrassed. They would have seen it literally hundreds of times. Mm. Or it may be you need to see, as Fee mentioned earlier, a psychosexual therapist of some sort who will, again, they won't be embarrassed. You won't be telling them anything they haven't heard before. But if it's more of a general thing, then you know, doing something like a Time for Marriage weekend or any marriage enrichment, there are plenty of books out there. There are plenty
really
of resources. We're fortunately not short of really good marriage enrichment resources. And because sometimes the sex thing might be presenting itself, the intimacy is the problem, but actually there are other problems. It is about communication. It is about forgiveness. It is about trust. It is about roles. So, you know, a general weekend, you know, like Time for Marriage might be helpful, but if it's a real specific thing, then specialist help, go and get it.
You know, Andy and Fiona, you've given us all sorts of wise counsel. Thank you for speaking in such a frank and unembarrassed way. That's very refreshing. So I'm going to ask you now, the title of this marriage week is Naked Marriage, which is a pretty good title, I think. So I'm going to ask you straight out, what has naked marriage meant to you as a couple during this lockdown?
Well, you know what? We're used to being in working from home. So I was going to say we're used to being in lockdown, but we're not. We're used to working from home because we have done for many, many years.
Over a decade.
So, you know, when lockdown first started, we were doing videos on how to do lockdown as a couple because we were like, it's easy, we're used to it, you know, this is how you do it. But actually, as time has gone on, what we've observed is that even the strongest of marriages are being put under pressure, and ours has also been put under pressure because it's gone on and it's tough. It's really, really tough. And I think Naked Marriage for us has been all about having really, deeper conversations, taking our communication and taking it deeper. You know, I'm struggling with this. We're not used to being like this. What's it feeling for you? How are you coping with today? Why is it so hard? Those kind of conversations, it has stripped us bare and not taking our relationship for granted. You know, we do marriage stuff, so of course we've got a great relationship. Well, you know, actually, these things have been tricky, you know, So I think for us, the Naked Marriage, it definitely has stripped us, you know, further a bit more bare, you know, but that's been a good thing. It's healthy.
Yeah, we've had to communicate, I think, even more deeply and perhaps really had to empathise with each other more, you know. Mm. So why is it I'm annoying you today, you know?
And he's so annoying.
You mean...
He, of course, is perfect, so...
Are you saying he's not the perfect husband? Are you willing to say that on air?
Bless him, I love him, but...
Well, that was Andy and Fiona Baines having a good old laugh as they talk about a difficult conversation with Premier Chick Yule for National Marriage Week, discussing the topic of sex and intimacy.